You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
On Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by Andrew Kuo, one of the young bloods that's changing up the art scene through a modern lens with the help of things like charts, Twitter, blogging, you name it. He's probably already knows what it is. Andrew's an artist and a DJ, a painter, a sculptor, a photographer. He's represented by Taxter and Spangman Gallery. And he also contributes to the New York Times Arts Beat blog, doing music reviews in the form of sort of colorful graphic charts that represent his emotional reactions to bands, albums, and live shows. Welcome to my show, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
The longest introduction ever. Did I cover all the bases?
You covered all the bases.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, you are a man of many things, so that I feel like I had to get as much in there as possible before we get going. So.
Sounds good.
So, you started out, you went to art school at RISD.
I went to art school at RISD.
Let's explore that. Did you go through the starving artist period in Providence? In terms of like, were you eating disgusting things? Like,
oh, for sure. There was one winter where me and my roommate tried to eat a pizza for every meal and a 40 every night. Oh. And it was disastrous. It was hilarious in concept. And 3 days into it, I was dying. But we did it for 2 months.
Oh, that sounds so gnarly.
I know. But when you're like 19 years old, like the resiliency your body has is crazy. If I did that now, I would die after 3 days.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, what was your 40 of choice? What were you drinking?
Whatever I could get because I was 19. So whatever anyone would buy me or what we saw in Dr. Dre videos, it was ridiculous.
Living vicariously through a 40 in Dr. Dre form. Yeah, I think I've done that too, though. I always had the Old English.
Yeah, that I always thought Old English tasted like
vomit.
Yeah, or bad breath.
Yeah.
It was like liquid bad breath.
Yes. Absolutely.
But if you make it cold enough, it's fine.
It tastes so refreshing.
yeah, exactly.
Where was there like a good food scene when you were in Providence that you, a staple of places you would visit?
Oh, Providence was kind of a disaster food-wise when I was there. I think, a Chinese restaurant everyone used to go to and, like, throw art shows at, but you had to drive there, so if you didn't have a car, you weren't getting there. And tons of pizza, and there was a sandwich shop, one of those sandwich shops that have, like, 100 sandwiches on the board.
Oh, yeah.
And if you ask a question, they'll, like, want to kick you out. One of those places, and every sandwich, by the time it got to your hands, was like waterlogged.
Is that the one with the open pickle barrel that everyone picks their hands into?
That's the one.
It's, yeah, I've totally been there.
Yeah.
Those pickles are good, even though they're crawling with some kind of disease.
Awesome college fingers.
Yeah, right. A little bit of a taste of brown, a taste of RISD.
Exactly.
In the form of pickles. All right. So, you know, your work is sort of like a narration of your life and the people within it. I mean, you deal with all sorts of media. You know, you're blogging, doing Twitter. You do these beautiful, vivid charts. For those listeners out there, if you haven't seen his work, you can check it out on the New York Times website or find them on your blog.
My blog that I don't update enough, actually, because I was telling you before, I'm the world's worst multitasker. But the Artsbeat blog and my gallery site.
Which is?
DexterandSpangerman.com. Hey. Which is really hard to spell, but if you Google it, Google will figure it out, I'm sure.
Taxter and
Spangerman.
Spangerman. Okay. Yeah. You got to say that one slowly. And then your book.
And my book, right.
Let Me Worry, which is so great. So did that came out this year, correct?
That came out, yeah. It came out like in the winter of last year or this year. I think February was the, yeah, it came out this year.
Got it.
And that book was about, I had done a show maybe 3 years ago at this point, kind of all about my father, and it was all the collateral from that. And I used to send out these emails every week announcing a party we would throw every Monday, and instead of just, we would throw this party every Monday, and it lasted for 3 years. It was called Hugs. And you know, we started off and I would just send people emails, be like, we're doing this party. And then progressively it got super personal, and I started writing about my week and kind of just updating people on what happened in that previous week. And I was going through a weird point in my life. And then after that, it was all I would send recipes for things I would cook throughout the week as these invites. And this book that I was lucky enough to publish has all of those emails.
Which I really would like to get into because, you know, the show is about charting sort of what's happening within current pop culture or younger generation of our American culture, if you will, through the lens of food. And for those who haven't seen What Me Worry, it's a beautiful, gorgeous 200-page book, which you should buy immediately. And it's got, you know, vivid charts, paintings, photographs, installations. It's essentially your life in a book. And one of the things that resonated with me were these recipes. And I kind of want to know, why recipes? Why is that relevant within your artwork?
I think it plays a role in that, you know, I started this body of work just trying to deal with my father's death, and a lot of the things I would start talking about would be like, of course, you know, like memory based or me even like creating like these stories based off of fragments of things I would remember in my childhood, and a lot of those things involve food, and I love all things food related. So it was a kind of another way to talk about something that wasn't as direct. And the repetition of doing something like that every week really it made it more comfortable for me to talk about something I was not comfortable talking about. And I think the accumulation of all of them told a story that I kind of enjoyed.
What out of all the recipes that are in there is one of the most important to you?
I don't know about important, but my father was a terrible, terrible cook. And this is not in the book, but when you asked that question, I immediately thought of one time he made me spaghetti with ketchup and American cheese. And that sounds disgusting as a grown-ass person, but when as a kid, it was the most delicious thing I could possibly think of. You know, it was a meal I would look forward to. But he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty charming of him.
Yeah, no, I think it actually sounds kind of good.
It's pretty good. American cheese is God's gift to us.
Absolutely. It's not really cheese, but it's totally the most delicious chemical.
Our mutual friend Carolyn recently told me it is actually cheese.
Really?
There's like cultures in it, and it's made out of dairy products, but it's just cut with a lot of other things.
A lot of crazy things that will make us have neon yellow hair. And Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we've got lots more from amazing artist Andrew Kuo. So don't go away. You're just tuning in. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I am still your host, Helen Holliman. I'm joined today by Andrew Kuo, one of the most interesting artists, I think, in the scene right now, in my humble opinion. He's kind of the modern man in terms of art, which I'm sure all the artists out there are yelling at me because I sound like the most
I'm gonna get beat up
crazy person right now. What was you chose that song for the break? What was that?
I love that song. I've been having a moment with My Bloody Valentine this summer. I was telling you earlier, I haven't been getting out much this summer. Mostly of it's my own fault because I just can't manage my time like a regular human being. But sometimes the only time I get out is to go on a run, and I've been listening only to that record while I run all summer, and it came out so long ago. It came out in 1991, and I stumbled back upon it because, you know, it's the 20th anniversary of the Nirvana record coming out, but it's also the 20th anniversary of Loveless coming out, which I thought was a better record.
Wow.
But I just love that record.
I'm more impressed by the fact that you run to that record, because I'm one of those people, I have to run to really annoying upbeat stuff, else I stop running altogether.
Right, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Just, like, totally bored by the beat. So I just blame it on artists, you know?
Like, oh, yeah, totally. Like
Girl Talk or someone like that who has to make me feel like I'm in a jazzercise class or something with my mother, you know? So you're also a DJ, and clearly you're out there. Going to how many concerts are you attending a week?
I mean, on a good spell, you know, I would go to maybe 4 or 5 a week. But recently, I haven't been able to get out as much. Last night, I had the privilege of seeing Bright Eyes and Dr. Dog, which is my personal fantasy.
Really?
I love both those bands quite a bit, and they played in the on the waterfront, and it was a treat. I felt like, you know, I've seen these bands at this point over 15, 16 times. And it's like, oh my God, it sounds so corny, but I thought about it and I'm gonna say it. It seems like an old friend, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they play the same songs and they change, but it's comforting.
What, besides My Bloody Valentine, what new artists are you listening to now? Oh,
so many. Like, I think it's an embarrassment of riches of music right now. You could just go on the internet and find all this great stuff. I mean, like everyone else, I like James Blake. I love what Drake is doing now, which is controversial.
Yes.
There's this band, Woo Life, that I love. They're from London. There's these young kids, and they just play straight rock, like kind of punky music. And they put out a record that is like embarrassingly earnest, like emo. and great. I love it. You know, give me more. God, I can go on. Destroyer.
What do you think of The Weeknd? What's your take on his approach to releasing music?
Oh my God. I think he is the worst lyricist ever. Like, his lyrics are, I love bad lyrics, but it's ridiculous how bad he is at writing. That said, it's really fun to listen to.
Yeah, it reminds me, this is going to sound really creepy, but when we were kids, my mom would treat us by going to the, you know, store to buy the Monday through Sunday underwear. And yeah, that would be labeled. The idea was that you would know, like, hey, if you're wearing Tuesday on Monday, you're probably like, you need to wash your laundry.
Right, right.
I was always that kid. But, you know, it's interesting how he just came out with Thursday and.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's sort of the anonymity of the release, and now he's not anonymous, but.
I mean, it's great. I don't want to sound like I'm down on him. He's awesome. And when House of Balloons came out, it was super exciting. And I love all the samples on it. It didn't make me mad at all. But then slowly the lyrics just, I couldn't listen to him sing about the things he was singing about. And then I realized how much more I liked R. Kelly. Like, R. Kelly is just the best. He's the best. And like, I think genius is an overused word, but...
I disagree. No,
It's just like, oh my God, this pizza's so good. You're a genius. It's like, no, you're actually not a genius. You just made a great pie. But he is probably a genius.
Yeah, I've actually heard rumors he is illiterate, but he memorizes.
I've heard that rumor too.
Yeah.
He also has. I think it's called his. He calls it his Africa room, where it's a small bedroom in his apartment. And he puts posters of wildlife up, like lions, cheetahs. And he has a chair and binoculars in there.
Just to look at the posters?
Yeah, in a normal-sized room. And it's great. I think he has ideas that I wish I had. I don't know. And, you know, like, I get into trouble. Oh, my God, I can talk about R. Kelly forever.
I'm just blown away right now. I'm just picturing him on a safari in his closet.
You know, and, like, one of my pet peeves is, like, someone who comes up to you and is like, what do you think of R. Kelly? And you can't say the right answer. Because if you say, I like him, they're like, but do you really like him?
Right. Right.
And if you say no, someone will try to stab you. But I get weird when people are like, oh, he's so crazy. He's not crazy. He's super smart.
Yeah, you know? I agree with you. I still can't figure him out. I'll just say that. But nonetheless, I'm intrigued.
He's comfortable with his eccentricities. And,
absolutely.
And they're all clever.
Anyone who can be comfortable with yodeling in an R&B song is totally confident.
It's a hit.
It's jammy. All right, so I want to talk about, again, since media has a huge role within your artwork, Twitter.
Right.
The last year, we've seen different ways that Twitter is being used. There's the Middle East and, you know, Egypt, Africa, all the riots that are, it's being used in this purposeful way.
Right.
There's other uses like Rafinha Bastos, the Brazilian comedian who basically built a stand-up shtick on the internet through Twitter.
Yeah.
And is now the most famous comedian in Brazil. I want to know, how are you using Twitter, and how does that influence your artwork?
I mean, it's a huge part of my life. I'm not even going to pretend like I don't care about it. I care about it a lot. And I think about it quite a bit. And it helps me in my practice because just in the nature of my paintings, a lot of these sentences are structured in the way that Twitter forces you to write. Like there's a character limit, and you can't really express more than one idea at a time. In my mind, in my opinion, but I think it's great. I think it's interesting for me personally. The degrees in which I can't help myself. Like, I always have this thought, like, you know, you eat half a burrito and you put it in the fridge and you're like, I couldn't possibly eat that. It's going to be cold and congealed and I am full. Invariably, 12 hours later, the burrito's in your hands and you're eating it and I can't help myself with Twitter. I mean, Facebook I've successfully, I think, in my life eliminated. I still check in, but only once a day if I have to, for 5 minutes. And I don't know if it's because I don't like Facebook or I don't like my friends. But Twitter's different because it's not about friendship or bragging. Or, you know, sometimes it is about bragging, which I enjoy too. Reading and sometimes by accident participating in. But I think Twitter's exciting. Yeah, I don't know if that's an answer, but.
Yeah, well, so all of that being said, what does it mean to be an artist today versus even 5 or 10 years ago?
I don't know, but I can try to answer that.
It's also the hardest question. It's like the impossible question.
No, I mean, I think, you know, someone who makes things would be lying if they don't think about that constantly. And they're just scared of saying the wrong thing, which I am now scared of. I feel like every generation has too much information, and I can't really prove that because I've only lived once, but I'm living once. But I think, like, I try to think what my father used to tell me when he first heard AM radio. It blew his mind, and he couldn't really imagine hearing these sounds from all these sources at his control. But, you know, and every generation wants to be smarter than the previous one. So an artist now might say, like, or, you know, I think some people would think or be curious about what, like, Twitter does with art, what Facebook does with art, what the internet does. Wikipedia is, like, my best friend. But I think there's a lot of information, but I can't really prove that art is any better or worse for it. Like, I'm trying to think of my favorite artists right now, and they're not talking about, it's not like Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Did Robert Longo direct that? No, he directed Johnny Mnemonic, which is crazy. But I think the future is never what we think it's going to be, and things are going pretty fast. I agree with speed. Things are fast now. And there's a lot of people making a whole lot of things. But in my opinion, I don't think it's any different than it's ever been.
Wow. Okay. That just blew my mind a little bit. Yeah, because I feel like the Twitter...
I have glasses.
Well, I think, yeah, it's only the glasses.
Right.
No, I mean, the Twitter feed and who you choose to follow and what people are saying, it almost makes me feel like, am I putting myself into a smaller universe by just selecting these people to see what their curation of what's happening is? Or is it that there's too much happening and it's overwhelming to see all of the infinite possibilities because they're out there every second updating?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And it's so crazy. It's like, you know, when some of my friends are like, I can't watch TV, you know, it's just like, I don't think it works for me. I'm like, well, how does moving images and thoughts not work for you? I think you're just watching too much bad stuff. I don't think there's a lot of bad things on TV. I think everything's pretty awesome. But it's the same thing with Twitter. It's like, oh, I don't believe in it. It's too fast. I don't know who says that. Maybe I'm imagining people say that. But you can curate it. And maybe that goes back to what you were asking about in regards to art. You know, like, kind of this... the idea that's kind of still relatively new is, oh God, I'm sounding like such a jerk, but like, you don't have to make anything. You can just curate something and you can select things and then show them to people and they tell stories that are new. And I think that's legitimate and relatively new. And you could tell Twitter what to tell you.
Sort of like YouTube and having a YouTube channel.
Absolutely. Or, being a fan of YouTube and just watching what you decide to watch. It was funny because someone on Pitchfork was complaining. Oh, the worst. DJ Shadow, the worst interview. If you guys haven't read it, it's the worst. But they talk about internet haters. And my first thought was, can we just call them haters and not internet haters?
Yeah, because they're actually people.
Yeah, and we don't have to put this prefix in front of a thought. It's like, oh, it's an internet thought. It's like, it's just an idea.
Yeah, because what would actually happen if their soapbox was a physical platform that they were standing up on and had to actually say that to you face to face? Like, don't you think the internet has created more negative snarkiness?
I mean, it's created like false courage, you know?
Yes. Where,
but I don't know. I mean, it's proportionate to the love. Oh my God, I sound like a moron. But like, it's 50-50 always. And negativity is kind of more interesting. It's like gossip. And I pay attention to it. And I consciously try not to participate in it. But also negativity is sometimes funny, you know? And like, there's jokes there. And it's okay. It's okay. We shouldn't be worried about it.
You could say perhaps that the internet has allowed people in the middle of, say, Iowa or somewhere in a small town.
No disrespect to Iowa.
No disrespect. I'm just saying I don't live there. It's very far away.
Right.
That they could turn into like a Clement Greenberg or a Donald Judd, so to speak, in terms of curating a Twitter comment, right? I mean, that it gives everyone this opportunity, sort of.
Yeah, it levels the playing field for sure. And as a human being who never felt like... I've always had a Napoleon complex, and the internet's great because I've never, you know, been the most comfortable person in the universe, and the internet is comfortable for me. It works. It's great, you know, like... But also... I don't know. People find a way.
I've also heard that Napoleon, they've done studies and he actually wasn't short for that time period now. So you can stand tall when you
say
Napoleon complex. Yeah, because you would be a giant in like 1757.
That is
you
awesome.
Would be crazy tall.
Yeah, I'd be regular. That'd be cool.
So, you know, what I love about your graphs or your charts is that you're charting... an experience, mostly it's usually like a music concert or a new album review that can't necessarily be charted. And this idea of the experience and the perception of these things, it's actually being broken down into beautiful data. And eating, like concert going or viewing art, is a very personal experience. And that being said, can you walk us through your charting process through the scenario of like a dining experience?
Oh, sure. It's funny you mentioned that because like I watch so much food television and I love it because you can never really know, like because you can't taste it. And you have to rely on everyone's stories to kind of make it work. And as opposed to something like Work of Art, you know, that reality show about painting. It's like, well, I see that painting. I have an opinion about that. And it's a whole different experience. You know, with food, you can't touch it, you can't smell it, you can't do anything. You can just look at the expressions on people's faces. But as it relates to charts, like, I'm not, you know, I've heard the idea, you know, quantifying the unquantifiable. But I'm actually telling you, you can quantify everything. You know, like, everything is quantifiable, obviously. Or not, obviously, but in terms of food, if you know, it's about. I like to be vague sometimes, so sometimes I'll try to circle it and talk about who I'm with. Usually, talk about who I'm with, like where I am at that day in my mind, and then the food itself, you know, and it's a whole bunch of quick thoughts. And you know, man, the food is kind of like the least interesting part, you know, I think it's like someone talking about a dream they had, you know, but which is not interesting to me because they seem to make it up as they go along, but that wasn't even an answer, but I mean that, I don't know. I was going to say sometimes I'll go into a situation and already like know what I want to think about it. And I think that works, but it's never true. It always changes.
What can we look forward to seeing from you in the near future?
Oh God, hopefully better work.
Everything you've done till now is terrible.
I've been tiger momming myself.
Oh man.
Yeah. I want to kind of concentrate and like step it up a little bit. I have a show at, I'm in a group show at the Scottsdale Mocha in the fall. Doing projects here and there. Interested in making music lately, but bad music.
Synthesizer music or
yeah, not,
R&B?
Not
or...
twiddling. No, not R&B. The first Chinese R&B. CDR.
I think Winnie's already has the corner on that. Winnie's Bar.
I feel like they
have some good Laserdisc Chinese R&B.
Yeah, there's some jams in there.
Yeah.
And there's some legit crooners. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What's going to happen this year? The same thing that happened.
Do you think that's a real thing?
No.
Are we going to be around next year to buy your artwork?
Hopefully. If everything works out. No, the world is not ending. I don't know. Maybe it is.
So we've got an album release to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
What's your Twitter account that everyone can follow?
Oh, it's confusing. On the internet, I go under the name Earl Boykins.
Isn't that a basketball player?
It is a basketball player who is exactly my height. He's 5'5".
Wow.
And he's great, and he always looks so sad. And he's good. He's known as a ball hog. He's got a really great name. People really like him. He's tiny. No, he's regular, but in a game, he looks ridiculous. So he's my internet handle. And that's my Twitter account.
And then your blog is?
earlboykins.blogspot.com that I have to update more for sure.
Or not. Just be really vague. And
yeah, or vague.
As part of the artwork.
right. I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Do you get it?
Yeah. Well, we got to wrap things up, but thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. For coming on the show today. Yep. And thanks to Jack Inslee and the crew at Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Roberta's Restaurant. Join me next week for another episode of You Look Hungry. I'm Helen Holliman. I'll see y'all later.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me.
The following is a message from NOFA NY. Do you dig local food? Love organic farmers? Do you crave to be part of a growing movement of consumers concerned with the state of our nation's food system? Then sign up today to take the NOFA NY's Locavore Challenge this September. Join 5,000 other New York locavores that are hungry, active, and ready to change our food system. Learn more at www.nylocavorechallenge.com. This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.